pastured producers with decision makers around things like meat processing. And we also create kind of a community. There's a listserv that's been pretty active where farmers can communicate with each other, share resources, and develop mentor-mentee relationships.
Along with creating community among farmers, FAF also bridges gaps between small farmers and the public, in part through their information sessions.
We also run public-facing programs like our very popular Infarmations, which used to be held in person, but now are online, and they are webinars essentially about various topics related to agriculture and really helping farmers connect with the wider public about things that they're facing, things that they're excited about. And our current series is about creative access to land and capital in Oregon for small and beginning farmers. And our next one is going to be on the last Tuesday of every month. So our April event is going to be on Tuesday, April 27th at 6:30 p.m. We also do advocacy on the regulatory side as well as the legislative side. We work with lawmakers to develop programs and secure funding for efforts to make being a small farmer in Oregon easier. Our vision is to create an Oregon where the food system is localized and based on a thriving community of small and mid-sized socially and ecologically responsible farmers who are selling directly to their communities in a variety of ways.
We've all seen products at the store with slogans about how they're a family-run business. And since we live in a time where labels are not necessarily the most reliable way to understand something, I asked Alice to define what exactly FAF means by family farm.
We define a family farm as a farm that the owners are actively involved in the everyday operations of the farm. That our farmers, they're also folks who have a commitment to stewarding their land in a way that's appropriate to their scale, appropriate to their business, and appropriate to the future viability of that farmland, who have good labor practices and are contributing to a more holistic view of sustainability in farming in Oregon.
You can't talk about farming without talking about land and who owns it. I asked Alice, who owns the farmland in Oregon? How much of it is owned by individuals versus how much is owned by large industrial farming corporations?
That is where it gets a little bit murky in the definition of family farm, because technically, if a industrial agribusiness corporation is still owned by a family and that family maintains control of the business, then it wouldn't be listed as like that farmland being owned by a conglomerate. So the land ownership is something that is interesting, especially as we're in this moment where the average age of the Oregonian farmer is about 60, maybe a little older than that now, because that came from a study done by OSU in 2016. And about 64% of the farmland in Oregon is due to change hands in the next 20 years, whether that be through sale or retirement of an older farmer or what have you. So what I can say definitively is that the majority of the farms, and you're talking about numbers of businesses, are small family farms as we define them. But the majority of the land being worked in agriculture in Oregon is not being worked by those folks. It's being worked by the larger, more industrial agricultural conglomerates.
Farmers are some of the first to feel the impacts of climate change. Alice says the wildfires and severe storms of this past year took a toll on small farms in Oregon.
Of course, everyone remembers the wildfires in September. I live on my farm in Eastern Lane County, and I was evacuated for 10 days, and I lost a lot my property did not burn, but the smoke killed a lot of my crops, and I am not the only farmer to have experienced that that secondary effect, let alone the folks who saw firsthand fire effects on their properties. And then also storms like the ice storm that hit the upper or the northern Willamette Valley earlier this year. And I believe that was February or March. Correct me if I'm wrong. But that storm decimated a lot of smaller farms, especially those who might not have, who might be too diversified for traditional farm insurance or might not have those safety nets of subsidies or lots of capital to fall back on, like the larger, more industrial farms. In those storms, we saw people lose structures, like animal shelters and barns even. There was extensive damage to fencing, which can be a nightmare if you're trying to control herds of animals and make sure that they are not running away from you in a direction you don't want them to go. There was a lot of damage to infrastructure as well in rural areas, like power lines, and a lot of people didn't get power back for a very long time, which can be a real big problem if you are a meat farmer and you have freezers full of product that you've already promised to people, but you need it to stay frozen in order for it to stay fresh.
On a policy level, Friends of Family Farmers is working to make the regulatory process more localized.
There's also some infrastructure barriers that I think we are working to address personally. One of them being the meat processing regulations in our state, because of the necessity to have USDA inspection at any facility where you get your animal processed and then you can then sell by the cut, like sell chicken legs or sell steaks, as opposed to selling a whole animal. You have to do that in a USDA inspected facility. The state is trying to address that by developing their own state inspected meat program that was authorized in 2020, and it's moving forward now. And we have been instrumental this session in getting a grant program associated with that state inspection through the legislature. It's almost through. It's not quite there yet, but it is in Ways and Means right now. And that would help finance new small and mid-sized plants that are more likely to want to deal and do business with small and mid-sized socially and ecologically responsible farmers like the ones that we represent, instead of larger, more uniform industrial agribusinesses.
Some of those industrial agribusinesses are also known as factory farms, which Friends of Family Farmers has a history of resisting.
We were actually founded when a group of very concerned citizens in the Scio area, kind of mid-valley, learned that an industrial agriculture facility, I think it was for chickens, was moving into their community. And they were concerned about the resource use of those facilities, the market implications of having an industrial facility there, and the infrastructure implications in terms of their access to things like processing and traffic and all of those things that go into having a facility of that size come into a community. And we, since our inception in 2005, based on an issue just like some of the ones that are popping up around the state right now, we've always kept an ear to the ground to see if there are facilities who are using laws designed for small farmers to inequitably access resources. For example, we have been part of the Stand Up to Factory Farms Coalition for a number of years now, and one of the biggest policy priorities for that coalition is enacting a moratorium on new and expanded permits for what we define as mega dairies, which are dairies of 2,500 or more cows. And that came out of concerns by and from the farm worker communities, in particular in Boardman. And that was the site of the Lost Valley. I'm comfortable calling it a disaster. That facility that was permitted a couple years ago and started having violations for their effluence, for their air pollution as soon as they were permitted and were quickly shut down. But the costs associated with cleaning up that site and the costs to the groundwater in that area will take decades to remedy. Like that is an example of a place where that is in the lower Umatilla groundwater management area. And they have had nitrate poisoning problems in that area with their groundwater for decades. But these facilities are able to continue operating and take advantage of some of the laws like the stock watering exemption that are meant to allow farmers to always have access to water to keep their cows alive, pretty much. Cows, pigs, whatever livestock you happen to have. But those folks are able to use that provision to take more water out of this already threatened system. And by their own admissions, by their own assessments rather, facilities of that scale, that dairy had, or the most recent permit for that site that I'm talking about was the Easter Day permit, was just recently paused, and they were proposing 30,000 cows for that facility. And their water use assessment of what they said they would need was greater on a daily basis, was greater than the total water usage of the city of Bend. So these facilities are not only changing what the system deems to be a farm, but it also, they have an ecological impact that makes it really hard for other farmers to do any kind of like generational approach to farming in those areas. So we continue to work with partners in the Stand Up to Factory Farms Coalition to try to raise awareness around the issues associated with facilities of that size. And we also, we don't just tear down what we consider the bad actors. We want to build up the good parts of our food system. So we're also involved in the Oregon Organic Coalition. Although not all of our farmers are certified organic, we do not require that. It's a standard that some folks, for a variety of reasons, cost being chief among them, have chosen not to pursue certification. But making more education and resources available through state extension and ODA in order to prioritize organic and organic practices, as well as these good soil healthy farming practices like the farmers that we're honoring next week in our Living Soil Awards, and also to lift up and expand these resources that are currently available to the types of resources that are available to industrial farmers that are not available to ecologically and socially responsible farmers in the same volume.
One of the major challenges facing small farmers in Oregon comes simply in the form of not having access to land.
It is very hard to access land and capital here in Oregon because of land prices and because of the way that farm credit is structured. It is a system designed to benefit larger growers. And so it's hard for smaller, more community-oriented, perhaps more diverse in terms of what they're growing. Like if you're growing for market, for a farmer's market, you might grow 100 varieties. You don't have one thing. You don't just have wheat that you can insure, or you could get some capital to progress your farm business. And also in terms of diversity of background, a lot of new farmers in Oregon, as evidenced by the success of organizations like the Black Food Sovereignty Coalition, the Black Oregon Land Trust, Adelante Mujeres, and Huerto de la Familia, there are a ton of folks of different backgrounds, some new to farming and some not new at all, some who had been farming in other countries, coming to Oregon and looking for ways to get into farming. And those barriers to capital and to land are holding a lot of folks back.
Black farmers and other farmers of color face unique challenges accessing land that have deep historical roots in Oregon. Alice explains the link between farming and racial justice.
I mean, at the heart of it, there will be no food justice until there is racial justice. And that's something that Friends of Family Farmers believes very, that's very core to our beliefs as an organization. And we also want to acknowledge the really racist past of Oregon land law and the fact that people of color, specifically Black folks, were not allowed to own land in this state for a very long time. And even after that law itself was repealed, there are systems of inequality in our society that keep BIPOC folks in general from accessing the land, the capital that can be so crucial to starting a farm enterprise. And it's also because I believe, I will correct myself if I'm wrong, but I believe that the Census of Agriculture for this state shows that 97% of farmland owners in this state are white. And that means that that intergenerational wealth and that access to land is passing down through white families. And so if you don't have that access, especially when it comes along with intergenerational knowledge, it can be really hard to get access to that kind of knowledge to make sure that you're once you get on the land, then you have another barrier of knowing exactly what the conditions are in this land, what it's been used for before, what works here, what doesn't. And those kinds of intergenerational wealths, not only of capital, of land, but also of knowledge, make it a very unequal system in the beginning. But I would, we are definitely not the experts on this, and I would welcome anybody who'd like to talk more about that particular issue of access to land and capital. Our information panel for the 27th, which is our next one, Tuesday, April 27th, that is an all BIPOC panel talking about the experience of trying to find land to farm while being a person of color in Oregon. So please join us for that program on the 27th and learn more from the folks who have direct lived experience.
On top of all of the systemic challenges small farmers face in Oregon, this past year they had a new one in the form of a global pandemic. Overall, the pandemic has been a mixed bag for small farmers in Oregon. For some, it was an extra burden, while for others, it was a windfall.
It's been kind of a bittersweet era for family farming in the pandemic. I know that last year around this time, we were having really mixed reports from our farmers. Some folks were like, wow, my CSA is sold out. I have orders coming in from people I've never, like, who've never interacted with my farm before. I've got new customers. People are beating down my door. And then there were also folks who, because they lost restaurant clients, they lost institutional clients like schools. The farm to school program in Oregon is pretty strong. And so that when schools shut down, a lot of folks who were relying on that farm to school model, didn't have an outlet for their produce. And folks had to pivot their sales models pretty quickly. We are so grateful for the work of the Oregon Farmers Market Association in advocating to the governor that farmers markets are essential businesses and they are outlets for groceries in our state that are vital to a lot of our rural economies, because a lot of farmers use those as their only outlet. And those stayed open, which was fantastic. But that brought more challenges as well. Like, you might have had better sales at the farmers market, but you also had to invest in PPE for you, for your workers, and you had to change around your protocols in the field to make sure people were socially distanced, to make sure that there were hand washing stations in greater supply. And there were a lot of resources, and there still are a lot of resources being given out across the state from various agencies, but it's a question of access and like whether or not you have as a farmer, you have the time and the knowledge and the connections to get those things to your farm and make sure that those programs are accessed equitably. And so, yeah, it was an increased demand on one side and then increased costs on the other, in addition to PPE costs and like the slowdown of some farm tasks. We also had folks reporting that they had a whole new set of challenges because for the first time, a lot of our farmers were diving into digital marketing. And that's not a skill that you think you're going to need when you're a farmer. You don't think, oh, good, I'm going to grow vegetables for my farmer's market. I better learn how to write HTML code. But that's something that a lot of folks had to come face to face with in the past year, that they needed an online presence, that they needed to have a pre-order system set up so that they could do contactless pickups at the farmer's market or from the farm. They had to make sure that their insurance was in order to have people pick things up from the farm if other sales outlets were closed. And they had to like manage all of that with the general existential dread of the pandemic. It wasn't any different for farmers. It was just in a different setting. But yes, I think the pandemic opened a lot of eyes to the importance of a thriving localized food system, but it also presented our farmers with more challenges, more than the ones that I've listed today. And we could talk about this a lot, but there were also problems with meat processing infrastructure during the pandemic, because those facilities also definitely needed to slow down and take steps to make sure that their staff were safe, that their they were cleaning in between as needed with the heightened COVID hygiene protocols. And we're so grateful to all of the folks at those facilities, but it did definitely cause some canceled appointments, and some folks who had been banking on using the processor that they normally used, all of a sudden those slots didn't exist. And so then some people got into a situation where they had this really high demand and they had sold their animals, whether it be through a community supported agriculture or CSA model, or through a herd share model where you sell the animal on the hoof and a patron owns a half of it, or some people call it locker meat, but you buy a whole animal all at once. But both of those things require payment in advance. And then when those processing slots didn't materialize, that sometimes really caused some hardship for our farmers in the last year. And that's why we're working so hard to remedy it now in the legislature.
Despite all the challenges, Alice says that the state of family farms in Oregon is strong.
I would say that farming is never without its challenges. It is a risky business by definition, because you're putting things in the ground or you're putting animals out there and you're putting in so many resources only to reap the rewards at the very end of the process. And there's so many things that can go wrong along the way. I would say that in general, the family farms of Oregon are strong, that our communities are supportive, and that local food is more important to Oregonians now, in my personal experience, than it ever has been before. I mean, of course, that's local food as we define it now. Everyone wants to eat well. We are all eaters and participants in this food system. But especially because of the extra attention that our family farms and local agriculture has gotten as a result of some of those supply chain breakdowns that we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. More people are more aware of the farms in their area than they have been in the past. Those empty grocery store shelves can scare folks into looking deeper into their communities, for sure. And a lot of people have gained a new appreciation of their family farm neighbors and family farm community members across the state.
Friends of Family Farmers is hosting their next webinar on April 27th, where you can hear about the inspiring work that farmers of color and organizations are doing to circumvent the barriers created by structural racism in the agricultural and financial system. More information at friendsoffamilyfarmers.org. You have been listening to Alice Morrison with Friends of Family Farmers, and I'm Isabel Charlet with KBOO. Happy Earth Day!
Thank you. listening to KBOO Portland.
Show your support for programming that covers critical topics with no corporate filter or influence. Go to kboo.fm